And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, it looks like this week we have 53 senators competing to be entered into the Hall of Shame.
Yeah, we had a Hall of Fame vote with baseball that was almost unanimous, and now we have this Senate that's just split apart, just totally split apart. And give credit to Mitch McConnell where credit is due. He's holding his people together. We've talked about in the past, the Republican Party has essentially become a European-style parliamentary party.
Correct.
And,
We saw it with Merrick Garland.
Yeah. Yeah. And it goes back to Newt Gingrich, essentially, with the House. And it's in full force here on the impeachment.
If this were a parliamentary constitutional system, well, then you could understand, what these people were doing. You know that they follow party discipline. That's what they're required to do. But this is not a parliamentary constitutional order. This is a representational democracy where each individual member of the legislature is elected to be the representative of a certain group of people independent of anything else. So right. the kind of party discipline that Mitch McConnell is exerting is completely contrary to the American constitutional order. Now, maybe it's a better order, what he's dreamed up. I'm not arguing if it's better or worse. I'm just saying it's not the one that he took an oath to uphold.
Well, his oath doesn't seem to be applicable to his actions.
Well, not just him, all the rest of them. Didn't they Monday take an oath to be fair and impartial jurors, each one individually?
Right.
Well,
right. And they've a whole bunch of them have already expressed the fact that they intend to be partial, that they're not going to consider the evidence. Their minds are made up. And and that's where we're at, in essence. They talk about moderate Republicans, and we've talked about that before. I've called Susan Collins a moderate of convenience. The best quote I heard this week, I think it was from Claire McCaskill, saying that there were moderates when we didn't need them.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, right. Well, I heard somebody dredged up a quote from Tom Harkins, the old Democratic senator from Iowa, right, who took part in the Clinton impeachment. And during the Clinton impeachment, one of the prosecutors was, speaking sweetly to the senators and addressed them as jurors. And Harkin spoke up and said, point of order, we're not jurors. We are not even judges. We are senators. We have powers that no juror has and powers that no judge has. We have both of their powers. And I don't want to be addressed as a juror because that denigrates the system. It's a profound misunderstanding of what our abilities, our powers, and our responsibilities are.
Sure. They have the power to subpoena. They have the power to decide the rules.
They have the power to decide who can be questioned if the questions are appropriate, if the questions have to be stopped. Mm-hmm. They have all of that. So,
right.
What you're seeing here, to me, is just another breakdown of the American constitutional system.
Right. And what you're also seeing is each side playing to its own base. Although the Republicans really are playing to the one, And that's the most disturbing thing, I think, about what Mitch McConnell is doing is he's abrogated the role of checks and balances of the legislature. That's what the founders really saw as being the backstop or the bulwark against a tyrannical executive.
Yeah, you got to give credit where credit is due. The Congress, Democrats and Republicans, long ago gave up their authority over the power to declare war. Right?
Right.
They haven't declared war since World War II. And we've been
war
unendingly since World War II. So this is just an extension by McConnell of what they've been doing for, 70 years. It's quite bad.
Yeah, well, and in some ways, it's a greater extension. Perhaps the two greatest powers of the legislature are what we're talking about. One, to declare war, and number two, to impeach a president.
Well, there's one other power. That's the power, as they keep saying, of the purse. But Trump says they don't have that power. He has the power to overrule their power. Certainly that's the case in terms of this particular matter with the Ukraine, where the Congress voted a certain policy, and he said, I'm not going to carry out that policy. I don't have to do that. I'm in charge. And the General Accounting Office said, no, you're not. You do have to carry out that policy.
Yeah, you broke the law.
You broke the law.
And there was one.
Doesn't matter,
there was one other. Yeah, well, there was one other area. That was when he wanted to shift the money from the Defense Department to building his wall. And a court went along with it.
A court went along. That's right. So that wasn't so clear because he got some court to go along with him. But the GAO, a nonpartisan group, and a congressional group, or a super congressional group, the auditor of the Congress, right, the auditor of the government, they say he broke the law. Well, if the Congress doesn't have the authority, if the legislature doesn't have the authority to be the final word on spending money, they gave up the authority on declaring war, and they have no power to impeach. Where is the American constitutional system, and why should anybody care about elections?
That might be what they're hoping for.
Well, that's true, but they would be right.
Well, but there's still people trying to argue for the constitutional system. And there were people that talked about the constitutional system.
I think Biden
system.
Is arguing for the constitutional system. And I think, that's his case. We want to go back to normal, the way it was before. But how do you do that? If the system is broken in so many ways, forget the psychology, the political attitudes of the Republicans. Just look at how the system works. If it's institutionally broken, how do you go back? What is it you're going back to? I don't understand it.
And that's, I think that's the conundrum. And that's the thing that the Democrats are trying to decide. Do we try to go with people who want to try to normalize it, or do we want to conduct our own revolution or counter-revolution as to what the Republicans have done in their revolutionary actions?
Well, think about it. The Republicans, and in part the Democrats earlier, have created a parliamentary autocratic system. That's what we've got. Now, I don't know how you go back from that. It seems to me what you have to do is tackle it head on. And if you do tackle it head on, you're not going back. You're going forward because you're not only undoing what was done in the past, presumably you're setting up barriers to having it done again. So you don't want to go back to where you could do it again. You want to go forward to where, A, you don't do it now, and B, you can't again ever do it. I don't know what that means, but from the viewpoint of logic, that's what it has to be. Right?
Yeah. Yes. I think from the viewpoint of scholars and what have you. But of course, you know, what really is amazing is how many of these Republicans have had a good education in constitutional law and constitutional processes. People like Ted Cruz, Tom Cotton, Ben Sasse, These are folks that have studied this, and even though they were labeled as conservatives, this wasn't part of the conservative doctrine until very recently.
But it's certainly part of it now. It's the bedrock of it.
Sure is. I mean, and you see people like, you know, back and forth, you know, Lindsey Graham, they've got him quoting, just the him quoting during the Clinton impeachment, and now saying just the opposite.
Well, how about Dershowitz? How about Dershowitz?
Yeah, I was just going to get right into Dershowitz, who's taught some of these people.
Yeah.
And he, you know, and he,
who made the exact opposite argument in the Clinton days that he's making today. Exact opposite.
Right.
And when he was asked about that contradiction, he said, no, I haven't changed my mind at all.
just the words have changed.
Yeah, just the words have changed.
and he's going out there, you know, claiming to be a representing the Constitution, not the president.
Right. That's right. He's a Democrat. He voted for Hillary Clinton. He doesn't like her, but he's standing up for the Constitution. Right.
Yeah. Now, I don't know when the Constitution hired him or how the Constitution is going to pay him as its client. But it's an absurdity in what he's saying.
Well, his argument is absurd. You don't have to be a great legal scholar to know that what he says is preposterous. It is preposterous. Everybody who has spent a minute and a half looking it up knows that the phrase high crimes and misdemeanors is a phrase used in the 18th century to encompass every kind of bad activity, high crimes and misdemeanors, the worst and the most small, everything. And it was a term of art, a catchword, a trade word that meant betraying the people's trust. That's what it meant. That's what everybody in those days understood it to mean.
So, it's what Alexander Hamilton said in The Federalist.
In those words. In those very words. So how can you now come and say, oh, no, you have to have a legal crime involved? It can't be just betraying the people's trust. It has to have a crime. But it doesn't have to be that at all in terms of the historical meaning of the word.
Now, Dershowitz's argument is also that if you don't have a crime, then it has no definition in anything. It's anything you can get away with. But in fact, the backstop to that happening is that in order to convict after an impeachment, you need 2/3 of the Senate. It's not just a majority vote or a light vote. It's a very heavy vote.
Right.
That has never been gotten.
Right.
The Andrew Johnson fell a vote short. The Clinton one fell way short. Nixon, it might have reached that point. It looked like it was going to, except for the fact that he resigned. So it is a very, very, it is something that the political arm of the Senate decides what it is.
Exactly. Exactly. And the Republicans have guaranteed that it doesn't work.
Right. Now, meanwhile, though, let's be clear. There are still those who are trying to fight for that. And we saw that in the House managers this week. And had they been given what I would say is fairly high praise, particularly Congressman Schiff, Adam Schiff, who's made some tremendous legal arguments and made it more than that, just a lot of sense. The question is anybody really listening? What's his audience? The length of the process going on for 8 hours a day.
8 hours? How about 12 hours? 12 hours? I was listening at 1 a.m.
The Republicans just haven't been listening at all. We've got them doing crossword puzzles, leaving the room, et cetera. because they can't wait to get this behind them.
Well, it's Alice in Wonderland. Sentence first, verdict afterwards.
Yeah.
So they've already decided.
Well, acquit him first.
Yeah.
But here is
where Trump, when he ran for president, was pretty clever as a politician. He started yelling about rigged elections, rigged newspapers, rigged media. This is rigged. That's rigged. Everything is rigged. And he's not wrong. It is rigged.
But he's the rigger.
He's the rigger, right. But it's rigged. Until the Democrats get up and say, this is rigged, if all they do is make brilliant arguments, I'll give it to Schiff, make brilliant arguments. All of them make good arguments. But who cares? The system is rigged. And if it's rigged, it doesn't matter what the arguments are. If you're taking the medicine for the wrong illness, you're not going to get cured. The problem here is the system is rigged. And the old system doesn't have the power to fix the rigged present system. It's just that, as you can see.
Yeah, and the other issue is the way the Senate is construed, where each state gets two votes, so the Dakotas get twice as many votes as California, even though they've got about a tenth of the population of California.
Yeah.
And the statistic I saw this week was that in a few years, 70% of America is going to live in, I forget how many states, like 14 states or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the rest of America is going to live in 30 some states. So it's a really skewed number. So that the Senate is always going to be a problem for the Democrats to get.
But it isn't a problem just for the Democrats. It's a problem for the American people. Because if 70% of the American people are living where they can't rule themselves, that's not a sustainable political system. That's a formula for riot and violence.
Yeah. And they'll win the House because they'll have 70% of the vote, but the Senate is where all, as we're seeing, where all the judges are approved and what have you.
Right.
So that's where you have to win. You have to win the White House as well, in order to be able to at least offset that.
And you have the Electoral College, which tracks the Senate and the House, right? So if the Electoral College doesn't work, and it can't work if the Senate works the way it is, can't work democratically, you're guaranteeing in the next 50 years a total breakdown of democratic government. Because the system was formed to fit an agrarian, small country. And it's now a gigantic, industrial, urban country.
Yeah.
And it hasn't changed. And nothing has changed.
But also to protect the slaveholding states.
Oh, absolutely, yes. But the point is nothing in the institutional arrangement of a representative democracy has changed. Therefore, it doesn't work to fit today's circumstances. Things have to change. Yeah. Or else you end up an imbecile, a reactionary, using imbecile arguments like Clarence Thomas, originalist. Have to figure out the right word, the correct word. What did it mean in a country where there were 10,000 white people who controlled the country? That's what we have to live by. Right?
Yeah.
It's just awful.
Yeah, no. It is.
And that's why the Democratic primary is so peculiar. You know, the New York Times endorsed, among other things, among other people, Amy Klobuchar, who can't get past 4% in the country. Because her whole thing is, I'm going to go back to working together in a situation where every teenager knows you can't do it. That's the way I see it.
Well, the thing is, does the appearance of at least wanting or trying to do it more beneficial than going the other way?
But you have to figure out some way. I mean, the political leadership of the country has to say, look, this doesn't work. We have to do something better. That does work. If you have the Me Too movement, you have that because the old way was you don't pay attention to women. You can do to women as you will. But then the women say, no, you can't do it. We're not putting up with it. Now, painfully, you have to find some way to change things. Painfully, because even some women are brainwashed into the old way. but it's not going to last. Women are not going to allow themselves to be treated that way. They're not. Same thing with African-Americans. They don't want to be killed by cops. They're not putting up with it. They're not going to put up with it. Right. You can't go back to the old way. You got to think about it, right?
You know, who else isn't putting up with it are the young people.
No, exactly. And why should they?
You have Greta Thunberg this week going to Davos and telling her elders, folks, your time is up, whether you like it or not.
I don't know who writes Greta Thunberg's speeches, but they're brilliant. And my suspicion is she writes her speeches.
Yeah.
So now you have this imbecile Mnuchin, our Secretary of the Treasury, who very snidely attacks her. Who's she? She ought to go to school and take an economics course, and then you can come back and talk to us. This from a guy who's lied repeatedly about the economy of America and the tax bills that he stands for and what they will result in. And every time what he says proves to be false, he never once apologizes. He never once says, oh, I was wrong about that. Just the opposite.
I'm right. The results are wrong.
Yeah, the results are wrong. It just hasn't worked out, but it will.
Yeah, it will. Yeah, in the long run. Just let us keep...
Let us keep ruining your life. It'll work out.
Yeah. Well, this week, don't forget, Trump came out and spilled the beans. He said entitlements are going to be on the table.
That's right. He's
going to go after Medicare.
That's right.
That could be it's so overshadowed this week, but they have something to play with, the Democrats. It might have been a...
And he means it.
Oh, of course he means it.
He means it. I mean, this was the week that he produced regulations, slashing regulation over the waters of the country. At the same time, he made a speech in Davos saying, we have the cleanest water in the world. Yeah, because we had regulations that you just got rid of. Come and make that speech in 2 years, and you won't have such clean water. It isn't possible. These are sociopaths who need to be in jail, not in office.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see. Meanwhile, in our neck of the woods, we've had some of those sociopaths who want to keep going after Matt Cartwright and grab his congressional seat. And we've had some things happen this week. Kevin McCarthy, the GOP leader in the House, endorsed Earl Granville. This is, the Republicans think that because it was a plus 10 Trump district, they have a good shot at it. And they have this veteran who lost a leg that they decided they want to back. And then out of nowhere, another GOP contender came out of the woodwork and said, not so fast. He's the fifth or the sixth person. And this guy's got some political savvy. He's worked on campaigns in Arizona. He's worked on campaigns for Arnold Schwarzenegger. He knows organization. He also worked for the World Bank. So he's got education behind him. I don't know how much money he's got behind him. He may have a lot of rich friends. And what it's shaping up to be is now a Republican primary where they're going to go after each other.
Well, that's wonderful. You know how much it costs? You know how much a candidate has to raise on average to win a congressional election?
Well, it's
based on 2018.
It's in the high six or low seven figures.
$4.5 million the candidate has to raise. And then he has to get outside support, PAC support, equal to $3 to $4 million. And then he's got to get congressional campaign support from the Republicans or the Democrats of $1 million or $2 million. That's the average that was spent by winning candidates in 2018. In other words, $9 million. That's a piece of work, right?
We need to invest in media companies.
I think so.
Mike Bloomberg has already spent $250 million.
Right.
On ads.
Right. Right. And Steyer has also spent several hundred million.
Yeah, he spent over $100 million. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So we'll have to see. You know, this week in Pennsylvania, the one guy who was supposed to run for governor, Speaker of the House, Mike Terzai, decided he's going to pull out of government.
Well, Mike Terzai is a big deal, right?
Yeah, he was a big fundraiser for the Republicans. And I think he would have been the front runner for governor. And now he said he's not running for re-election. And it seems to be that he's going to go into private industry.
Well, he was a guy that got a lot of money for the gas industry.
Yeah.
And he fronted for the gas industry. So presumably he'd go and work for them.
That's the rumor. Yeah. That's the rumor on that. So we'll have to see what happens. But it kind of leaves the Republicans leaderless at this stage, with a big election coming up for control of the House and possibly the Senate.
These people who are running against Cartwright, the Republicans.
Yeah.
Am I right in thinking that they come from Luzerne County, a bunch of them?
Yeah, most of them do. Granville's the only one that doesn't. They're coming from the Hazleton area as well. I think this is the Barletta effect, that he galvanized a lot of the sentiment there.
I guess Barletta galvanized it, but it was Trump that empowered it.
Yeah.
It's the same racism. It's the same anti-immigrant racism.
Yeah. And that's going to be the key, because I think that in the congressional election, Cartwright's going to do well in Lackawanna County. He's got the whole county now. And he's not going to do that well in Pike and Wayne counties, but they're smaller counties.
Right.
So he probably going to break even down in Monroe County, where a lot of New Yorkers and New Jerseyites have moved into in the recent years. So it's going to come down to Luzerne County and whether or not the Trump effect is going to have enough coattails. And we're just going to have to see. We're just going to have to see on that race.
And Luzerne County used to be a Democratic county, right?
Yeah, they still have a huge registration lead, but it's not nearly what it is. But it's that demographic, that white, older, non-college-educated demographic that constitutes Luzerne County and has been shifting to the Republicans. It's the same way in southwestern Pennsylvania.
Well, I hate to say it, but I think that Cartwright's salvation would be Bernie's coattails. Because I think Bernie has a good chance of making inroads into that vote. And I don't think any of his opponents do. I don't think the Biden and Clinton type, although it's Biden said Biden-Obama, but it's the same politics. I don't think that Democratic Leadership Council approach is going to make inroads into the white working class vote.
Well, I think Biden relates to them better, and Biden is more likable. You know, Hillary just didn't relate to it, and you had the misogyny that went along with her campaign. That won't be there with Biden, but I at this point, I don't know. I think that the Trump people are so locked in that to cross over to Bernie, the tri-Trumpers, I'm not sure where they're going to go. I think it's
premature. Well, we'll see. Meanwhile, next week is the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz by Allied forces.
A stain on humanity.
A stain on humanity. Not the liberation, the Auschwitz.
Auschwitz itself.
Auschwitz. And here's a stain. Half the people of this country have never heard of the fact that in World War II, 6 million Jews were murdered.
Well,
that's a fact.
I have an article coming out this week about that, so
we'll look forward to it.
Yeah.
So we'll see what's happening with the Republican defense, which is starting now, ongoing now.
Yeah, but mostly it's going to be on early in the week, Monday and Tuesday.
So we'll see it. We'll be able to talk about it next week. See you next week.
See you next.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City. 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.